This is a special Occupation Nation edition of the Mike Malloy Show. Could this be it? Could this be the democracy we've all been waiting for? Occupying your public airwaves right here on The Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, democracy lover, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, once again drafted into duty right here to be the media with you. Broadcasting live from the left coast from the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150 in lovely downtown Burbank, coast to coast and around the globe with you tonight as the uprising continues. Delighted you could be with us here tonight. Hope you'll stay with us for three big hours ahead. Mike is, of course, in Washington, D.C. tonight. Occupy Washington, D.C.org or October2011.org is now underway. Mike was emceeing the kickoff event this afternoon in Washington, D.C. We're going to hear from him in the next hour. We're going to get an update from Mike Malloy right here on The Mike Malloy Show as to how things went and how the protests are starting out and how long it looks like they may be around out there in Washington, D.C. It looks like they're going to be around the rest of the nation for quite a while, and so we're going to be covering a lot of it here tonight. Of course, with Mike Malloy, we're also going to be talking with Joshua Holland of Alternate in the next hour. He was late night after we went off the air last night, and we have a great affiliate up in San Francisco, Green 960. We were hearing from occupiers around the country. We were hearing from folks in San Francisco who were occupying up there outside the Federal Reserve Building, I believe it is. And, I had asked one of the callers, I said, how's it going with the police there? How are you guys getting along? Are the police being supportive? He said, oh, yes, very. They're being great. Well, must have been an hour after we got off the air last night. The cops showed up, started putting on their helmets, their riot gear, their batons, started moving in to occupy San Francisco. Which caused a bit of a stir on the Twitters last night. And I was actually following Joshua Holland, who was on the scene reporting what was going on. You can follow him yourself, by the way, on the Twitters at Joshua Hall, H-O-L. And they had brought a notice that the occupiers needed to take down their tents. This was, they had given them a deadline of midnight, and it was a cold night last night, rainy night certainly down here in L.A. I suspect the same was true up in San Francisco. And in the middle of the night, the police told them they needed to take down their tents. We will find out why. We will find out what happened from Joshua Holland in a little bit here. You can also join the conversation yourself at the bradblog.com chat room, which is up and open and being hosted by the lovely Dez for Earth. I think, is Jeannie Dean there yet? Jeannie Dean will probably be there. She's been down at the Occupy LA encampment for the last few days. So hopefully she'll be joining us, as will Dale, and hopefully you. Come on by and occupy the Brad blog. We would love to see you there. You can also Twitter us throughout the night. or whenever you'd like to Twitter me. My my address there is The Brad Blog. Would love to see from you there. And we will be, as we did last night, as we will again tomorrow night, keeping the entire third hour open for calls from the occupation. Occupiers around the country, occupiers around the world, we would love to hear from you. Write down this phone number. This will be our number tonight and tomorrow, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down, because in the third hour, these are your public airwaves. They've been taken over by corporations. We, the people, have very little access to them left. You need to use them before you lose them more than you already have. That's 877-520-1150 in hour number three. We may get to some calls before that, but definitely in that third hour. Also, we're going to be joined by Nancy Toby from New Hampshire, the author. Folks who know me, who know the work that I do at bradblog.com, know I cover a lot of election integrity issues, a lot of issues about democracy, the war on voting, the Republican war on voting, I'm sorry to say, and, of course, the problems with electronic voting. The insanity of electronic voting. Last night we had on the show Dr. Roger Johnston from Argonne National Labs, who recently, with his vulnerability assessment team there at that lab, and that's a U.S. lab, by the way, it's the Department of Energy runs that thing, found that they were able to hack a touchscreen voting machine with $10 in parts, or $26 if they wanted to add a remote control that would allow them to take over any touchscreen voting system from up to half a mile away. He also said he could do the same thing with a paper ballot optical scan computer. And while about 30% of the country use touchscreens, pretty much the rest of America uses paper ballots that are counted by computer, not by human beings. Well, since those systems are also easily manipulated and often fail, what the hell are we going to do about it? Tonight, we're going to start talking about solutions with Nancy Toby from New Hampshire, where they 40% of the towns count their ballots by hand in front of We the People, all parties looking, video cameras rolling, right there at the precinct on election night, with results posted at the precinct before ballots move anywhere. A very, very difficult system to game, a terrific system to be able to oversee by the citizenry, at least those of us who care about self-governance. She's the author, Nancy Toby's the author of Hands-On Elections, an informational handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. Oh, imagine that. So we're going to talk about that and how you might be able to bring hand-counted paper ballots to your town. Occupy your polling place. Occupy your elections. Seems only right. So she's going to be joining us as well. So as you can tell, it's a big, big... Oh, and Desi Doyen, our producer, my lovely co-host of the Green News Report, if we can find the time, she may be joining us. Perhaps we'll play today's Green News Report. Okay, what other... That's a lot of business, but I think I got it all covered. Okay, a couple of things here. this is amazing. These occupations continue to grow, and they continue to grow even as we've got the folks on the right. Frankly, they are scared to death. They are scared to, you know, they might as well be bringing out guillotines at this point, because that's the way these plutocrats and these folks on the right who have been conned by the plutocrats. These folks, many of them in the Tea Party, who have been played for stooges, who have been conned, who have been tricked, who have been hoaxed into believing that sticking up for corporations and the top 1% of Americans is somehow good for America, is somehow good for the middle class. When the top 400 people in this nation have more wealth than the bottom 140 million Americans. You think we got a problem? And that's not always the way it's been. That is what it has become steadily over the last 30 years. Going to be talking with Josh Holland about that as well, because he's a big economist guy. And he's a book with a great name, too, but I can't find it. Where is it? Oh, yeah, here we go. Josh, his book is The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy and Everything Else the Right Doesn't Want You to Know About Taxes, Jobs, and Corporate America. Listen, these guys are scared to death. Just look at Mitt Romney. What did Mitt Romney say? I got to get organized before I start this. I can't even find the quote from Mitt. He's calling it un-American, I think is what he was calling these uprisings around the country. The same people who had been applauding the Tea Party for being great Americans, for standing up for their democracy, for standing up to big government. Those same idiots are now out there like Ann Coulter comparing these uprisings to Nazis. I'm not kidding. She said before the French Revolution, this reminds her of before the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and with only slight modification when the Nazis came to power. This is always the beginning of totalitarianism, she said. These people are scared to death. Herman Cain, God love him. Nice guy, dumb as dirt. Dumb as dirt. I'll try to play some of his clips when we come back, and some of what Sean Hannity had to say. Again, Sean Hannity, the biggest supporter of the Tea Party, couldn't be more proud of these Americans showing up to protest, to make noise. Of course, the Tea Party, they weren't the Tea Party. They were the sore loser party. That was it. That was all it ever was. And again, I wanted to make a distinction, not the Ron Paul Tea Party, not the real one, not the one that started back in 2007, but the fake Tea Party, the corporate Tea Party. You notice one thing about these occupations? They got no great big painted bus. No huge bus working across the country. Why? Because they ain't got money. Because this is a real grassroots movement. This is really we the people. And folks, it is happening. We'll see what happens. We'll see how far it goes. But it's happening in every corner of this nation, and it's about damn time. We're going to be covering it all night long. Glad you could join us here. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Much, much more. Stay with us. I will continue my rant momentarily. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Show. Occupation Nation continues tonight. I will continue my rant in a moment, but as our local Los Angeles affiliate does not play the third hour of the program, I wanted to make sure to get an update from Occupy LA from our friend Sanchez. A very quick update, because I'm running out of time already at the bottom of the hour. Hey, Sanchez!
Well, Sanchez, Senator Friedman, we had 500 to 800 in a lunchtime rally, energized. It was a non-violent march, but we were more cohesive and more unified. There was an occupation of the Bank of America lobby, where they brilliantly unfurled a giant check with the amount of the belly, the $608 billion. We are over 100 tents north of the City Hall this evening. Everyone is energized. The General Assembly is getting ready to begin. We are 99. That's why they're afraid of us.
Yeah, they are afraid of you, and the crowds are building now that the rain has passed, Sanchez?
Yes, with peaceful, vocal, passive. We've got the unions behind us. IWW, we have the nurses, we have the teachers. We have all these other people. It came together today. It's a good old-fashioned lunchtime rally, Brad.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for checking in. And if you're in Los Angeles, get out there to City Hall. And by the way, you can stop by Brad Blog and see this remarkable resolution that the L.A. City Council is passing in support of Occupy L.A. Some really extraordinary language in there. So, hey, thanks, Sanchez. Stay in touch. All right. Let me get. I wanted to. Oh, there we go. I wanted to get to what Romney had said here, to be specific, since I had referred to it. Romney said, I think it's dangerous, Mitt Romney said about the protests. This is class warfare. He thinks it's dangerous. He thinks it's class warfare. Well, if I was in his class, I'd be worried about that, too. But it's your class, Mitt, who started this war. It was your class, Mitt, who fired the first shot and who fired millions of Americans. That's how you made your bones, baby. What are you complaining about? You've been sending people to the unemployment line for years, and now you're complaining about class warfare? Maybe you should have thought of that in advance. Maybe all the plutocrats should have thought of that in advance. Because every time, and this is amazing to me, you know, I'm in favor of capitalism. Don't get me wrong. I'll say this over and over again. Capitalism is great. Competition is great. But you need to have rules. There needs to be referees. You can't let one guy like Mitt Romney control everybody else. When you take away the power of the people, when you take away the power of the unions themselves to compete, then you don't have capitalism anymore. You have authoritarianism. You have plutocracy. You have monopolies. That's what we have in this country. That's why the people are pissed off. This is not a class warfare. This isn't people who, you know, there's Marxism, social. They're scared to death. They are scared to death. No, the people want a fair shot. Nobody wants to put Apple out of business. But they do want health care. They do want fair wages. They do want all the things that Mitt Romney gave himself and robbed from everybody else. I don't think I have time for that. I keep promising as Herman Cain. One of these days I'm going to play. Because unbelievable how stupid this guy is. Again, nice guy, but stupid, dumb as dirt. I'll just, one part of what he said. He says, I don't have the facts to back this up, but I happen to believe that these demonstrations are planned and orchestrated to distract from the failed policies of the Obama administration. If you don't have a job and you're not rich, blame yourself, this jackass says. Blame yourself. It's all your fault. It's all your fault that these corporations moved all of their jobs to China, to Mexico, and told American workers to go to hell, because that would be better for America. Are you kidding, Herman Cain? Jesus. Brad, in for Mike.
Something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, you look at what's going down? From L.A. to Chicago to Louisville to Wichita to Hartford, Anchorage, Charlotte, Lexington, Boston, Seattle, Philadelphia, Denver, Iowa City, Miami, Portland, and many, many more cities around this country. People are saying enough. They're standing up. It's a real grassroots movement. It's so real that there's some confusion about what the hell they actually want. Of course, when the people have been ignored for so long and the corporations are the only ones who are getting any attention, when the people have been ignored for so long, there's a lot of stuff that piles up. So it's going to take a while to figure this thing out, and I'm just fine with it. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, back here in for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy program while he's out in D.C., And he will, by the way, be joining us in the next hour. He was emceeing the Occupy Washington, D.C. rallies today. So we're going to hear from him. Last night, as I mentioned in the last hour, last night we were taking calls. We heard from folks out in San Francisco. I had asked one of them how things were going as far as the occupiers out there, how they were getting along with the police in comparison to what we saw in New York City with the pepper spray and the luring them onto the Brooklyn Bridge only to arrest 700 or 800 of them. And he said it was great. The relationship with the police was great. Well, we've got a great affiliate up there in San Francisco, the great Green 960, who plays the Malloy Show. And, you know, so I was delighted to hear from folks in San Francisco. But when we went off the air, within about an hour, all of a sudden we start hearing reports that the police are putting on their riot gear and they're giving notice to folks, to the occupiers out there, that they needed to take down their tents by midnight on a cold and rainy night, or it would be taken down for them. Or they would be arrested. Well, I was following Joshua Holland of Alternate. He's a editor and senior writer out there. He's also the author of The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy and Everything Else the Right Doesn't Want You to Know About Taxes, Jobs, and Corporate America. I was following his coverage on the Twitters, where you can find him at Joshua Hall. That's H-O-L, Joshua Hall. He was covering what was going on there with the police as they were talking about moving in to the occupation. It was quite riveting in the middle of the night, and I think it was somewhat remarkable to do at that time of night, and I'd like to find out why. Well, maybe Joshua can give us some answers. He joins us now here on the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, Joshua, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being had. Now, so you were covering this. You were out there, what, until I think you signed off about midnight or 1 o'clock? And you
said maybe until about 1:45. You know, there was a call that went out on Twitter, and they said, look, the police are getting ready to move in, and they're going to, you know, smash, occupy San Francisco and arrest everybody. I got down there, and I saw, you know, quite a bit of agitation among the protesters. The police were around the corner. There was perhaps 70 of them. Most of them were kind of milling about, enjoying their overtime.
They are
public employees, the right's number one boogeyman right now.
Right.
And what I found was that they had decided that this is a rather large occupation on a city street, on Market Street, which is a touristy area in front of the Federal Reserve. And there had been quite a bit of infrastructure built, which I've written about this week. So mm-hmm. The protesters had not only tents for sleeping in, but they had a kitchen set up and an aid station and a library. It was quite the little community that they've built. And mm-hmm. I think this is a fascinating aspect of this whole story, is this genuine democratic kind of communities popping up in the streets of America. And when I got there, there was quite a bit of agitation. They were having a discussion about how to respond to an order that they'd received from the police to, as you mentioned in the introduction, take those tents down and clear out this stuff that they had built, this infrastructure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And they had given it a midnight deadline, which came and went, and you know, the anxiety kind of mounted among the protesters, but, expecting the police to come in with all guns blazing.
Well, and before we get to whether they blazed or not, when was this notice actually issued? Because I didn't hear about it until about 11 o'clock at night. It says this is a notice from the police. This encampment is a violation of the law. For those involved in the encampment at the Federal Reserve Bank, you are in violation of one or more of the following local ordinances. And they talk about open flames, public nuisance, preparing or serving food without a permit.
Right.
When was that issued, and when did they suddenly notice, Josh, that all of this was going on? 11 o'clock at night on a cold and rainy night?
Well, so I got there at about 11, and I guess they had been served those notices about an hour previously. So sometime at about 10 o'clock, the police handed out these notices that you mentioned. Look, let's not pretend that there wasn't an element of harassment involved in this. They were certainly asserting their power and influence over this very genuinely grassroots movement that had popped up on the city streets in front of the Federal Reserve Bank. They're legally, I think that they had good standing, at least as far as the San Francisco code goes. There are laws on the books about cooking and all of that stuff. So when they got there, I saw...
But Josh, when did they start doing this? Did they start cooking last night at 11?
I think 2.5 weeks now.
Okay, so 2.5 weeks, and suddenly last night, on a rainy, cold night, they suddenly noticed that they were cooking?
Look, this thing has been growing. I've been visiting it every day, and every day it's larger. Brad, every day I go there, it's larger.
Good.
So last night when I got there, it was about threefold. It had grown in size by about threefold since Sunday. When you challenge centers of power, they push back on you. I mean, this is nothing new in this country. We are aware of this dynamic, or we should be. And, again, as I say, there's no doubt in my mind that part of it was the authorities, asserting their authority. So they came in with that express idea. And one thing that I should really make clear is that this is not New York, and the SFPD and the city of San Francisco does not respond to protests the same way that the NYPD does. And soon after I arrived, we got news that one of the city supervisors was going to come down to the scene to lend support to the protesters and to negotiate with the cops. So that happened. John Avalos came down. He's a city supervisor.
Right.
And I went and followed him when he went and spoke with the senior policeman on the scene. I don't know if he's a commander or supervisor or whatnot. And he said, look, I'm really worried about this operation because, there's tensions are high. And what's going to happen, I fear, is that your cops are going to go in there and people are going to react. And then you're going to have to use force and things are going to escalate.
And what happened? What happened after midnight as the deadline to remove this? I mean, this was the order. Accordingly, you are being ordered to take down this structure. Refusal
right.
to comply and or obstruction of our efforts to remove the structure may result in your arrest.
That's
at 11
right.
o'clock.
So, the first thing is that the police responded to the supervisor that they were going to give them some time to let them try to cart away as much stuff as they could before swooping in and doing that. And the protesters did do that. They organized, it's fascinating to see this kind of democratic process at work. They organized a bunch of people with cars to come by and pick up as much stuff as possible and take it off site. This occurred after I had my cell phone had run out, and I have a dog that needs to be walked. So I was back at home. It was about 2:15, 2:20 when it actually happened. And I watched the whole thing on live stream. And what happened was the police came in riot gear, and they formed a line. And, I should step back one second because I forgot a key piece of this. When I first arrived, there was a meeting going on about how to respond to this. And there was a contingent who said, look, we are not going to acquiesce to the police's demands. This is outrageous. We're exercising our rights and we're not going to acquiesce at all. Another larger contingent, they were in the minority and they were willing to be arrested. They were willing to be arrested as a classic act of civil disobedience.
Right.
There was a larger group that said, look, the most important thing here is not getting arrested, but to maintain the occupation. So if we have to do it without a medical station for a day or two until we rebuild, that's fine.
They took the medical
station here.
They took the medical station?
Well, they took everything. The medical station is a tent with, with the first aid kit.
Right.
So they took everything, yes. So the consensus was, because they couldn't reach consensus on how to respond to this, that those who are willing to confront the police and be arrested could do so, and the larger group, the majority who did not want to, would support them in such a way that they would not be subject to arrest as
right,
well.
Right.
So the police came in with, you know, riot gear. They made a line, and their goal, their mission, if you will, was to escort the Department of Public Works as they cleaned up the sidewalk. And they were, you know, intimidating, and they stood in a line with stone-faced. They refused to answer protesters' questions about what was going on. And a few protesters decided that they were, who had previously decided this, confronted police, and I, there was some force used. One person was arrested and reportedly charged with assaulting an officer.
Let me, and Josh, I got to get to a break here, but let me just say, you know what, I think that the police, and you're right, you know, these are union members. They ought to be supporting. They ought to be like in Tahrir Square in Egypt. They ought to be standing with these protesters, not moving in at midnight. I was watching that live stream as well around 3 a.m. or something last night, Pacific time. And, you know, it's not like they moved in. They were violent or swinging their batons or anything. But the notion that they would throw people out, that they would take their tent, their sleeping tents, their medical tents, in the middle of the night, you know, I find that extraordinary. Contrast that, Josh, with what happened down here at Occupy LA, where we had torrential rain yesterday, and Mayor Villagrosa sent out 100 ponchos to the protesters, where the city council passed a resolution, an extraordinary resolution, where they talk about, you know, corporations holding undue influence and power in our country, and the key to this power is the corporate claim to personhood, and so forth. And they decry all of that in support of the protesters. You know, I was just amazed to hear what happened there, to be frank. I'm glad that everybody is okay. Are they? Did they lose numbers in the bargain, Josh? Actually,
no,
don't.
I mean, the thing is that when they do this, when the police overreact, I think that it only helps the protesters. So I have not been down there today because I had to work on a piece for tomorrow. But the reports that I'm getting, and I know several of the people down there, is that it's a larger crowd in very good spirits. They're rebuilding.
Good.
They're calling for more things. So, I mean, getting to your point, I think it's important to understand that there's a continuum here. I mean, in New York, you're seeing some real excessive force, brutality, indiscriminate. It certainly seems from where I'm sitting, indiscriminate use of mace, of batons. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, they arrested 24 people. I saw those on YouTube. There was quite a bit of violence with that. You know, as far as the continuum, I guess L.A. is showing the most progressive response to this broad movement. But I wouldn't put San Francisco with New York.
But no, I wouldn't either. All right, we got to take a quick break. Speaking with Joshua Holland of Alternet.org. Want to talk about his article, too. If top 1% hadn't ripped off trillions, you'd likely be making thousands of dollars more right now. Going to talk about that after the break with Joshua Holland. You're listening to Brad Friedman right here on The Mike Malloy Show. Stay with us.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Yeah, one for you, 19 for me, indeed. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly blogger, in tonight for Mike Malloy, speaking with Joshua Holland of Alternet on not just Occupy San Francisco, as he has been reporting and covering via the Twitters and via Alternet, and you can find him on the Twitters at Joshua Hall, that's H-O-L, but he's also been writing about it at Alternet, and he had a great article today. We're short on time, but let's try to get to this very quickly. It was called, If the Top 1% 1% hadn't ripped off trillions, you'd likely be making more. You'd likely be making thousands of dollars more right now. It starts this way. The corporate media appear to be obsessed with the idea that the Occupy Wall Street movement doesn't have a cohesive message. Of course, that misses the point. As Nathan Schneider wrote in Yes Magazine, quote, "More than demanding any particular policy proposal, the occupation is reminding Wall Street what real democracy looks like, a discussion among people, not a contest of money," unquote. And Joshua goes on to write, "And despite the hand-wringing about the movement's supposed lack of focus, it does have a simple-to-understand message that fits neatly on a bumper sticker." Okay, I'll bite, Josh. What's that message?
Well, that message is that we are the 99%. And, you know, I'm a nerdy guy, so I wanted to actually dig into what that means. And I took a database of American income, national income, that goes back to 1913. And I said, like, what is this top 1% of households? And what I found was really remarkable. If you look from the end of World War II through the time that Reagan came into office in 1980, the top 1% averaged 10% of our nation's income. This is the top 1% of households, mm-hmm. not individuals. Mm-hmm. And then something shifted dramatically during the Reagan administration. So by the end of the Reagan administration, the top 1% was taking 15.5% of our national income. And that accelerated. That continued to accelerate until 2008, the last year of the series. Mm-hmm. If you look at the last 10 years, the top 1% have taken in 20.04%, twice as much as they did in the post-war era. And, you know, we hear a lot about conservatives pining away for this, you know, better days in America in the 1950s and the 1960s. The bottom line is that the 99%, you know, we are the 99%. We were sharing 90% of the nation's income mm-hmm. throughout that period. And if you look at the year before the crash, the top 1% was taking in 23.5% of our income, and we were sharing the rest. And if you look at this, you know, this is what we talk about when we talk about stagnant wages for 30 years. You know, this has not happened by an accident. It's not anything that is intrinsic to capitalism, and it's not because the top 1% have somehow become smarter or no. better looking or harder working. This is about real policies that lead to the upward redistribution of our income.
Yeah, redistribution of our income. That's what the folks on the right are worried about. But they're the ones who are redistributing it up to them. And as you write in this article, had Americans' productivity that they held in the 1980, had that stayed the same, that middle-class families would be making $12,500 more per year. Listen, I got to get out. Josh, great article, though. Check it out at Alternate. Joshua Holland, if top 1% hadn't ripped off trillions, you'd be making thousands of dollars more right now. Joshua Holland, thank you, sir, for your time. Stay safe out there in San Francisco.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
You bet. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Mike Malloy himself joins us right after this break. Stay with us.